Thank you for joining me this evening. I'm Dave Schrader, and tomorrow night I'll be back with you hosting Coast to Coast AM. My special guest, Whitley Strieber. Whitley's got a new book out. We're going to talk to him about underground and undersea alien bases. Whitley's got some unique perspective and insight on alien encounters, UFO encounters. We'll find out more about what he wants to share with us. That's tomorrow night. Tonight, the Berwyn Mountains UFO event of January 23rd, 1974 is regarded as the UK's second most important case of extraterrestrial visitation after the Rendlesham Forest incident. An amazing encounter at sea between UFOs and the Royal Navy, an ambush by the RAF fighter jets, and dozens of Army personnel helping to conceal the evidence of a downed UFO and what happened to the otherworldly visitors from the recovery. The Berwyn Mountains incident is one of the world's most intriguing UFO incidents, a case that may in time become known as Britain's Roswell. Stephen Lumley, a freelance journalist, is our guest this evening, along with Russ Kellett. The book is based on the extensive research, evidence, and information that Mr. Kellett has been able to amass. He is a UFO abductee, a researcher, and an enthusiast. We are going to come back in just moments, and we'll continue to hear this unbelievable case. This is the Berwyn Mountains incident revealed on Coast to Coast AM. The Berwyn Mountains incident revealed. Our guests, Russ Kellett and Stephen Lumley, back with us. Russ, all of this remarkable evidence and information that was given to you, these five gentlemen, why would they pick Russ Kellett to be the one to expose this story? Why turn over such important pieces of evidence to you? Why not Nick Pope? Why not somebody else that might have a broader spectrum, a wider reach?
Well, first of all, I was around before Nick Pope. Nick Pope didn't come into the equation. He wasn't around at the time. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is that I was a trusted investigator, and a friend of mine was the person who was introduced to this group. So he said, look, you know, I know a researcher would like to talk to you about this. And like I say, I was given the statement, I was given all the maps, and there's some unbelievable information on those maps, which is probably for another book.
And, well, Russ, why would they, okay, they give you the information, they want it out there. To what level of credibility do you have that these men weren't giving you information so that this case would be, you know, maybe looked upon differently, and maybe they're hiding a real case, not anything to do with UFOs, but hiding maybe something much more nefarious that they were working on. But it's so much better to, again, the disinformation could totally wipe out the credibility of the story, and people would be so focused or either believe it's UFOs or think it's hogwash that they'll forget what actually happened and that there may have been something much darker that the government was working on.
There probably was. Like I say, I didn't just sit down and go, oh, right, I believe this. Because the first thing I said was, yeah, what a whopper. I even said to my friend, you know, sort of like, when I read the statement, and I was given all these maps, was again with other incidents and abductions on the maps, and I did say to my friend, you know, sort of like, are these guys having a joke with me? You know, so what it does say, it says that, you know, here's the evidence, you know, this is what we found, you've got the maps, and basically you're a researcher, you research, you know, see what you find. If you see what I mean. So that's what I did. I went about researching, writing, and interviewing people. And, you know, the same people on all the police logs, right, yeah, and the police, I've been told, the police logs can't be authentic. Well, it's funny because the people's names on the police logs, right, yeah, On my 192 disc and everything, and I've found these people, located them. I've actually got taped interviews with these people, right, yeah, which Stephen Lumley listened to, and then I give him, you know, sort of like the tapes to listen to. They've got the telephone numbers there, so he could basically ring them up and speak to them for himself, right, yeah. So everything, you know, sort of like everything in these logs, the logs must be right because the people on on file with the police from that major incident, right, yeah, you're speaking to. If you see,
Stephen,
what I
mean. when you're getting this information from Russ and you're able to listen to these interviews with these experiencers from that time, you know, I mean, explain to me how you're processing that. I mean, what is it like to have the story 40 years old, but yet you're still able to get the access and peel back these layers from people that were on the site at the time?
Well, it's a fascinating process, isn't it? Because people are still talking about an incident that took place 40 years ago. And when you listen to the interviews, they're not rehearsed stories. They're actually really quite pleased to be talking about it with somebody else. And as part of the process, I actually met this third party, this mutual friend, who was the conduit between these five men who did the research. And what Russ isn't saying is the men didn't actually initially want to hand their research over. And then the situation arose that they were quite happy to do so. And I met with this third party, and they were all professional men. They all had some standing within their community. So what they had wasn't a hoax, or it wasn't made up. It was they were genuinely intrigued by what they found and looked into it. And because four of them were senior officers in the British Armed Services, they used some of their contacts within various ministries to find out more information, and that's what they did.
All right, talk to us more about the incident as they're flash bombing the ocean. They pick up these three craft. The three craft leave the water. One of them appears to be damaged. There's RAF fighters that are going after them. What happens to these three different UFOs, Russ?
Well, basically, they're intercepted. As they come inland, you can see that they look like... it looks like one of them is heading for a lake, right, yeah? And maybe to put down until the fighter jets go past, and then maybe pop out and head off again. Now, a witness did say that he saw some water and a splash, and he thought he saw something, you know, sort of like going to Bala Lake, right, yeah? Then we have another craft, which lands, or supposed to have landed. This is the major one, where the name derives, which is the Berwyn Mountains. Now, this is where the major one was supposed to have come down. And, you know, so that's the first, the second. There's also the third one. Now, the third one lands in the next village, Clandriflo, next to Clandrillo, which is the next village to the Berwyn Mountains. Now, the thing is, so we've got three craft here. We've got the Berwyn Mountains, we've got the Bala Lake, and we've got the Clandriflo at the side. Now, this one was at the side of the road. Now, what happened, the men was actually driving down that road when they saw the flying saucer, and it was a flying saucer at the side of the, and only just at the side of the road. Right, yeah? And... you know, this is, they got out to look, and then these five creatures got out of this craft, and two of them looked like they were in trouble. They looked like they'd been hurt and injured. Not long after, they'd pulled up and were looking at this was taking place in front of their eyes. The military was straight on them. And they were told to get out of the area, you know, sort of like these men, you know, there was the troops, the soldiers, had rifles, and the officer that came up, you know, he had a belt kit as well, which a pistol. Now the thing is, what the said was that also, which is I've never heard this before, but these alien type creatures, right, yeah, also was wearing what they called a belt kit, right, yeah, with some which looked like some kind of weapon. They had insignia on them and on the uniforms, and there was insignia on the craft too. And they actually left a drawing with me of the craft and the insignia and the belt kit.
Now, has this insignia shown up in any other, and the descriptions of these aliens, has it ever shown up in any other cases that you've been able to cross-reference?
Not the same. No, not the
okay.
same.
All right, so you've got this information. Now, they've given you what you believe to be a piece of craft, one of the alien ships that was shot down, correct?
That's right.
Or damaged. Okay, has there been any metallurgy, any kind of testing done to find out what kind of metal this is? Is it anything out of the world, or is it, you know, a basic metal?
Right, well, it looks like aluminium. It looks like a piece that came from a similar piece, but a lot bigger. It actually turned up, I was reading on one of my Facebook pages, in Bentwaters, Rendlesham Forest, sorry. Right, yeah, looks identical to this. As for testing, I did leave it with somebody to be tested, and basically I got a piece cut off the end. It was very hard cutting it off the end, only a small piece, and it couldn't get the job done. I asked him, because I was ill and I couldn't get out, I asked if my friend could go and get it tested for me. Basically, it came back in bits and sort of like smaller pieces, and not conclusive. Then I was told somebody would look at it from a university, but would have wanted the whole piece. And I said, no chance, because I've been told by somebody there was another piece of metal that had been taken to be analysed, and it ended up being lost. So I'm thinking to myself, I've got something here, and I don't want this going the same way. Unless, now I know that we were supposed to be getting this sorted, where if Steve takes it and brings it back in a day, yeah, fair enough, it'll go for testing. If not, no chance.
All right, so you've got this evidence, you've got these pieces of craft, you've got parts of the airplane stuff, you've got parts of the alien craft, you've got first-hand accounts.
It has been the piece of from a Pegasus engine, and I can't see what they said it was now. But yeah, I've got that here, which I'll be putting up later on my website, BritishUFOHunters.com. I'll be putting that up later on.
Now, the three craft that left the water, did all three of them end up down somewhere, or was there any of them that were able to escape?
It looks like the one that went into the Bala Lake, it looks like that one got off. But like I said, there was talk that the one... the thing is, I did two talks... you know, sort of like one in Bala about this, and a video we made, and we were talking to people, and what they were saying basically was, in my research with these people, that there was a couple of hundred troops on the ground in these villages and on that mountain that night, right, yeah? And that is there for people. You can hear people talking. Other people have said the same thing. There was an helicopter landed, you know, there was 200 troops, basically, in this village, right, yeah? Now, the thing is, I also had a taped interview with somebody who was a sergeant in the army that night, just about 4 miles up the road, and they said that they had been there for quite some time before this incident, quite some time after the incident. And there was talking about a way out if anything if anything really happened serious. There's been routes, drawn up for them to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, I sat Steve down and give him all these taped interviews, it is absolutely amazing, really, that there were so many military personnel and other witnesses rung me up as well to say that they'd seen the military on the night and they'd been billeted at the side of the road. And a lot of these people, remember, had been in the army, and they were saying these guys were ready, they were ready for something, there was armed. And
right, that's what I was going to ask. The military that was out there, were they out there prior to this going on, or was this in quick reaction to the possible crash?
This didn't just happen. This had been, this had been planned. This wasn't something that just happened. Everybody was saying that the troops had been there. They'd been billeted in different areas. Right, yeah, in woods and what have you, woodland, and in different other different places, they were ready for something to happen,
Now let me ask Stephen. Stephen, you hear these stories, you get to listen to the accounts firsthand, some of the recordings. Were there ever any of the stories that left you feeling cold, that you didn't buy what was being said? Is there any information that came out that you didn't include in the book because you thought it just wasn't easy enough to substantiate, or just was too out there, or that maybe you were being fed some bad information?
The short answer to that is yes, and it led to a few disagreements with Russ. And basically everything that's in the book has either a paper trail or a taped interview, or it has something behind it. So these aren't empty allegations that we're making. And the interviews with the soldiers are fascinating because they say some interesting things, and Russ has an interview with a sergeant who rings up, and as soon as he mentions something, there's a particular point in the interview where the phone goes dead, and then the sergeant calls back, and then they get talking some more about some more detail. And then when he refers to a certain thing again, the phone goes dead again. Then the sergeant calls back the third time and says, right, I've got the message, that's all I can do to help you now. Good luck with your research. So and when Russ says that people are saying that these guys are ready to go, basically they are old soldiers, and they know when a platoon of soldiers is kitted up, ready to take action. And this is in the wilds of North Wales. This is a mountainous area. There's no threat. There's no exercise. It's a dark, wet night in the middle of January. And there's no real reason to be there other than, like Russ says, it was a planned event. They didn't know what was going to happen or when it was exactly going to happen. They just knew something in North Wales was going to go down.
So they were at the ready in case one of these craft, in case they were able to bring down one of these craft and have this encounter. We've got to take our bottom of the hour break. We'll come back. We'll continue finding out more about the story. We'll find out what happened to the craft. What do we know? What's real? What did other people see? There are some remarkable facts regarding this, including lights in the sky, corresponding with earthquake activity, many witnesses from different walks of life that all claim to have seen these from different perspectives. That's the Berwyn Mountains incident revealed tonight with our guests, Russ Kellett and Stephen Lumley. Stay tuned. More coming on Coast to Coast AM right after this. Thank you for joining me this evening. I'll be back tomorrow night with Whitley Strieber as my guest. Underground and underwater alien bases. That's our topic. Make sure you tune in again. That's tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. And if you can't listen live, but you want to keep up on what's going on the best in overnight talk radio, then make sure you become a Coast Insider. Very easy to do. And for about 15 cents a day, you can get access to over 5 years of past archives. You can also get access to live chats with the hosts and with some of the best and most popular guests right here from Coast to Coast AM. It's all easy to find. So much great information, news, archives, updates, and more. Go check out coasttocoastam.com. Find out what other millions of listeners have found by becoming an insider. Again, at coasttocoastam.com. And if you're a fan of the paranormal and the strange and supernatural, then join me 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Central Time at darknessradio.com. So we explore the strange and unusual world around us, monsters, myths, legends, and so much more. Tomorrow night, we'll be exploring paranormal encounters. You can call in and share your real-life encounters with the strange and supernatural, and then stay with me, because as soon as Darkness Radio rolls up, I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM with Whitley Strieber. I'll be sitting in for George Norrie out on assignment. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We've got more to share with the Berwyn Mountains UFO incident revealed right here on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. My guests are Russ Kellett and Stephen Lumley. Together, they've come together to put together a book called The Berwyn Mountains Incident Revealed. We're hearing some of the accounts of this very strange encounter that took place. All right, gentlemen, let's get back to it. Russ, where do you want to continue the story now?
I forgot, where was we?
Well, you talked about the fact that, you know, after the flash bombs had been sent off, you had the three UFO craft that were seen. They left the water. One appeared to be damaged. There was a couple of different crashes. One believed to have been escaped into another lake. Where does the story go from there? How do we start to piece this together where many people were seeing this from different locations, different sightings, but it was all part of the exact same experience? Plus, I want to talk about the strange case with, you know, people were seeing the lights in the sky, and then there was this earthquake that was going on. Can you explain to us a little bit about that?
Well, the thing is, the earthquake was, there were things seen around the night sky around about 8:38 was logged as the time of the actual earthquake, right? Yeah,
right.
Of the earth tremor. But the thing is, you know, all this had been going on, you know, sort of like the depth charging, and there were more than one depth charge going off in the sea. And the thing is, people are actually reporting what they call man-made explosions. Right, yeah, people that have been in the military, that they've said, you know, like I'm ex-army, and I'm you know, hearing what sounds like detonations going off. Right, yeah. Then there's people that are talking about a huge UFO actually coming over an area where our witnesses say at Capel Carrick that the RAF actually hit one of these UFO flying saucers, right, yeah? And then it appears that they retaliated and hit one of our fighters. And there's explosions galore going on, you know, sort of like all over, you know, and it's all, if you have a look, it's all on this route. Where these flying saucers actually heading to, like I say, this Bala Lake. And you can see they're heading inland, and you can see that they're starting to head back out up towards Liverpool. You know, that they start turning and heading north. But unfortunately, this is where they've been intercepted. So, you know, this is what's happened.
Could there be, has there ever been any research done, and either Stephen, maybe you could weigh in on this, and Russ, it, you know, okay, so we know that they're attacking the water, trying to flesh these things out. We talk about underground possible alien bases. Could some of the explosions and what they believe to be man-made explosions, yeah, could it have been a full count assault?
Yeah, let me tell you now, David, it's as simple as this. When the sergeant was talking, he says, we are not talking about aliens. There was not talking, that, you know, there wasn't told that there was going to be, you know, sort of like flushing out aliens. You know, there was there for another job. right, yeah? He wouldn't say what that job was, right, yeah? You could tell he didn't really want to say too much, but, you know, what he was saying was that they did see there was a light in the sky. There was another witness, which he didn't want to, you know, he didn't want really to be mentioned, didn't this witness, who I spoke to. And he was on top of, this thing was on top of him. And the military, right, yeah, actually went to him and asked him what he saw. And he said, well, I didn't really see anything but this bright light. Now, he was up about 4 miles up the road at a place called Colwyn, right? And they'd been down on that chap within a matter of minutes, right, yeah? So, obviously, they'd been billeted around, not far from this area.
Okay.
Right, yeah? But he did say that that they'd been there for quite some time before and quite some time after. But everybody who has seen these military, these troops, have all said there was all carrying weapons, and there was a couple of hundred of them. There was a lot of them, basically scattered all around this actual road. And like I say, he wouldn't really divulge what he was doing there, but he said that there was there. Like I said, they'd been there for some time before and some time after this event. So...
All right, you've got all of this going on here. You've got so much activity, so many different things that are taking place. I know some of the questions are, is it coincidence? These the lights in the sky could just be meteor shower, asteroids.
No.
Then you've got the earthquake and all of this going on. The epicenter, from my understanding, too, keeps changing every time they do new research on it. Is that right, Stephen?
The epicenter for the earthquake has changed twice, and initially it was underneath the Berwyn Mountains, and every time they've carried out new research, it's moved further and further away. Now, the one reason why this was a major incident for the North Wales Police is that dozens of people called the emergency services that night because they heard a massive explosion. And people were sat on sofas or couches, and they were thrown onto the floor. Crockery was thrown off shelves and things like that. So people then go out into the streets, and they see on the mountainside a huge UFO changing colours. It's just sat there. And when people are ringing the police, they're not talking about an earthquake. They're talking about a major explosion. They're not talking about a fire on the mountainside. They're actually saying, we can see a UFO. And the police, they've no idea what's going on. Some of the people ringing up, like Russ says, are ex-forces, and they're describing a massive explosion, a man-made explosion. I went to see the British Geological Survey, then carried out an investigation, and I've gone to look at their notes, and they were interviewing people in the days afterwards, and people are very clear about what they saw. And you're right, it's as part of the official explanation, it was an earthquake. And there's this massive coincidence that there was a meteorite shower passing overhead at the exact same moment. Now, there was a meteorite shower in the north of England that night. That's indisputable. Unfortunately, it didn't reach North Wales.
All right.
People have accepted that at face value.
When you had said earlier, too, that when these depth charges were going off, these flash, and the one came out damaged, that there suddenly was this glut of UFO activity that was seen over England and different parts. Could that be, could some of that have been mistaken for the asteroids or the meteor shower that was going on that evening?
No. And for years, the Ministry of Defence denied there were any other reports of UFOs that night, absolutely nothing. And then when they published the account in the National Archives, apparently there were at least 6 official reports of UFOs that night, as far away as the northeast, where a massive torpedo-like UFO appeared. But these things are moving very, very slowly. They're not meteorites. They're not a bull-eyed meteor shower passing overhead. They're very, very distinctive.
All right, Russ, so when you're looking at the rest of the story and you're starting to piece this together, it certainly starts to expand, and it's getting bigger. I mean, there's so much going on. You've got different people coming in. Now, at any of these supposed alleged crash sites, is there any, what's the word I'm looking for here, civilian witnesses that are getting up close to this? Are they seeing bodies like they did at Roswell? What can you tell us about the debris?
Right. Well, the witnesses that I spoke to, the gentleman and the five men, they saw the one that was at the side of the road, right? Yeah. Now, when I'd gone and met the other witnesses that were talking about the ones that was at Clandriflo, Clandrillo, the next village across to the mountain, they was talking about. Hundreds of troops around the village. There was talking about the helicopters landing, what they were saying basically was that they was taking the bits away. Right? Yeah. This is on record because I was filming my talk and was talking and asking people were asking me questions and I was asking them questions, and at one point it got really heated, and there was people arguing, saying, you know, you didn't see that, and, you know, like, there was 200 soldiers, an helicopter landed at the school, you know, and it's like, there was almost fighting each other. It was unbelievable. You know, sort of like, this man said he looked out of the window, and he saw, you know, he said there are a lot of troops, and I said, well, how many? 10, 20? And he says, oh, no. 30, 40. He said, no, he said 100 and more. And I said, what, 100 troops? And he said, oh, yeah, they had to be 100, 200 people. He says, military. He said there were people that looked like there was scientists as well that got out of the helicopter, you know. And I'm just sort of like, I just could not believe my ears. And this man basically shouted out, oh, don't be silly, you know, like, that never happened. And he said, well, what did you see then? And he said, my mum and dad told me to go to sleep and not to look out of the window. So I said, well, how can you tell him what he did or didn't see if you didn't look out of your window? Does that make any sense?
Right.
How can somebody tell somebody what he did or didn't see in the same road looking out of his window? If he didn't look out of his window, he can't back that up, can he? And when I asked him that, you know, sort of like, nonsense. You know, these people were fighting each other. You know, some were saying, no, there wasn't so many. And I said, well, how many? And one said, oh, there were about 50. Well, even 50. But they're all talking about helicopters going up and for days, kept on going up and landing. You know, they was there for sort of like 20 minutes and then take off again, and another helicopter had come and that would be there 20 minutes and that would take off. You know, all strange things like this. You know, but the people...
With all of that activity taking place, you would think that there would be some records, military-wise, NASA-wise, something that could prove that this type of exercise was taking place. Stephen, were you lucky in finding any kind of detailing of official statements stating that this was taking place?
The short answer is no. And one of the reasons for that is that the forces that they got together that night were, well, we call them special forces now, but that wasn't the term they used then, because they were equipped for a range of eventualities. So they had engineers, they had intelligence, they had infantrymen. So when you go to the Ministry of Defence and you ask these questions, all you get, I mean, Russ has been doing it for far longer than me, and he's got 20 years of letters from the MOD denying anything ever happened. And then eventually, because people move on and the story doesn't quite stay the same, you get chinks in the story about, well, actually, there may have been something happening that night. There may have been UFOs seen that night. But you never get a straight up and down, this is what happened, this isn't what happened. As far as the MOD are concerned, there was no military activity that night. But we've got witnesses, and even the British Geological Survey notes say soldiers were there that night.
We're going to take a break in a few moments. When we come back, I do want to discuss with you a big part of your story in the book hinges on a document that you do have. And, Russ, you were the one that got that document. Is that correct?
Which one's that? Because there was the photo flash, but there was a letter from the MP.
Well, let's talk about both, what you've got to share with us in the next segment. I think originally what I was referring to was the... what is it from the MP that talks about the, or I'm sorry, not the MP, but the flash, because you believe that helps to substantiate a big part of the story and prove that this did take place. And if that was in fact going on, that would make so much more sense with what was being reported all around. So
that's
we'll talk about how you got that, how that came into your possession. I know that there's some skepticism towards the, validity of that letter as well. So we'll discuss both sides of that. And again, if people want to find more information about you and your research, Russ, what's the best way for people to reach out to you and follow along?
Well, you can find me at BritishUFOHunter.com.
BritishUFOHunter.com?
Yeah, BritishUFOHunters.com or
Hunters, okay.
On Facebook, Russ Kelly.
All right. And we've got, I believe, links for it up at Coast to Coast AM, so you can go check out coasttocoastam.com, and you'll see links for tonight's guest. You'll also find great information on all of our past guests and what's coming up for the next week here on Coast to Coast as well. Stephen, is there a website people can go find for you and follow what you're going to be working on? I know you've got new books that are going to be in the process of being written and covering more UFO encounters and stories.
The best way to contact me is probably via the ufobureau.com. That's the ufobureau.com. They have a contact page on there. So if people are interested in the Berwyn Mountains or any other issue of paranormal, I'm interested in hearing from them.
Great. So check it out. We'll have those links up on the website for you to check out. We've got so much more coming your way. Remember, tomorrow night, Whitley Strieber joins me right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to talk about underground and underwater alien bases. We'll talk about some of the unique insights that Whitley Strieber has regarding UFOs and aliens. He's got a brand new book out that is a fiction, work of fiction, a novel, but includes many of the points that Whitley knows to be true, many of the insights that he's had over the years of dealing with this. We'll find out, is there something that we should be afraid of? Is there some reckoning coming? And are we on top of that? There are these strange holes that are showing up in Siberia. There are strange things going on around our planet. Is this signs that aliens are ready to start making communication? Are they coming up from underneath the ground, as many people are speculating? We'll find out so much more with Whitley Strieber tomorrow. And again, go check out coasttocoastam.com to become a Coast to Coast insider so you can hear more shows like tonight's show and keep up with all of the past and future guests, live chats, and so much more at coasttocoastam.com.